away from the notes. Wow, awesome. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am so grateful to be here this morning. I personally want to thank Jean and Brian for your hospitality. Oh my gosh. It's amazing. This community has been so good to me, and I just want to thank you. Alaskans are quite friendly. You are. I was told that I didn't come at the most beautiful of times. I was told this, but it is gorgeous out there. It's kind of cold for me. Not for you guys, but yeah, I was sitting in the airport in Seattle on my way here and minding my own business on my cell phone, catching up with my social media, and three people approached me, I guess, of course, Native Alaskans from Moose Point. And they started a conversation with me, and I think they talked to me for about 30 minutes. I was like, wow, you know, you never know who you're going to meet. They just talked about who knows what. But I was like, wow, Alaskans are really friendly people. So it's good to be here. And my topic today is the sacred amidst the shadow. So I want to start with a story. Some of you know from my bio that I was in Ukraine last September. And I went there to lead our annual peace conference there. And it turned into a peace conference because of the ongoing turmoil there. And I was sent there pretty last minute by our minister, Reverend Barbara Leger, who has her center there. And it was kind of intense and crazy to think that she wanted me to go there within less than a week's notice. And so I get myself to the airport and I get to the gate, and the couple before me was an older couple headed to Hawaii, and you know, the gate checker was all excited for them and wishing them well. And then I get up to the podium, to the platform, and he looks at my itinerary, and his face just turned really dim. And he's like, are you sure you want to go there? And I was like, oh my gosh, I just got myself to the airport. Please do not put more fear in me. I am going. So I will share a little bit more about that experience and what it was like being in Ukraine in the midst of turmoil. But I want to speak a little bit more to giving us some context about the shadow. A few weeks ago, Don and I had the privilege to be at our annual Science Mind conference in Las Vegas. And as many of you probably have known, if you've been to Vegas, there's the lights and the action and the shows and the crazy weird people on the streets, and there's the no time, you know, you're up at all hours. And I thought to myself, why are we having a spiritual conference in Las Vegas? Right? It's kind of an oxymoron. And I thought to myself, gosh, this is really interesting. But what it showed me on my way home, after decompressing and really getting back into alignment with myself, because it was pretty intense energy there, I realized that it's the perfect metaphor. It's the perfect metaphor for how the shadow unapologetically reflects itself back to us. And how it shows us to come back into alignment with the truth of light, of beingness, of peace, of all those things that we teach. And so what I came to understand there even more so is that our consciousness matters, that vibration matters, that how we show up in the world matters. It all starts in consciousness. And what I see in life is that many people are going through life asleep. They're going through life triggered by external forces, by the media, by family members. We're all walking around, and some people are like walking wounds. And so the question that came to me in preparing this talk was, how do we embrace the shadow and the darkness when it shows up on our doorstep? So the shadow, the definition of the shadow is a dark area or shape produced by a body coming between rays of light and a surface. My definition of the shadow, it's the hidden aspects and the parts of ourselves that we don't necessarily like. It's the parts within us that we don't want people to know about. It's the disowned aspects, the things we really hope people don't know about us. And when those things haven't been brought to the light, when those things haven't been integrated into who we are in a way that is seen as beautiful and teachable, where we're taught by them, then they come out sideways. They tend to come out through blame and anger. They come out through shame. It comes out through worry and fear. And then we're left with feeling horrible about ourselves, and what do we do with all of this stuff that is made of, that I'm part of? And so we ask the question, where was God in the situation? Where was God when this really difficult challenge happened? Where was God in the worst of conflicts in the world? But to shift, we have to acknowledge the shadow. Sometimes in this philosophy, we get really excited because we come into understanding this teaching, and that we are co-creating with life, that we are co-creating with the divine to create the experiences that we want. And so we get all excited, and then stuff happens, right? And then we go, oh, you mean I have to do that? I have to remember that principle, or I have to look at that? I don't really like that. It's kind of scary and icky. But what we understand is that we're human, and we're all human beings having a spiritual experience or vice versa, and so it's just an opportunity for us to get to look deeper. And that stuff can be scary. And so many of us hide. You know, many of us look to addictions or things outside of ourselves to make us feel okay, to make us feel whole, to feel complete. We do it in relationships. Have you ever noticed how we tend to repeat the same patterns in relationships until the 2x4 comes and hits us and says, oh, are you going to get this yet? So Dr. Darren Weissman says that emotions transform energy. Energy causes movement. Movement is change, and change is the essence of life. The more we embrace and create change, the more we are in flow of the universe. So I'm on the plane headed to Switzerland to Ukraine, and as I get on the plane from Switzerland, it's half empty. And of all the times I've been to Ukraine, which is, this was my sixth time, this was by far the most intense and scariest. I got on the plane and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, what am I doing? This is crazy. And of course I started to freak out. Everything that I've ever been taught over the last, 8 to 13 years kind of went out the window, and I started freaking out, making up all of these stories about what was going to happen and how the plane was going to go down and like all of this horrible stuff. And we do that, don't we? We make stuff up that hasn't even happened yet, and then we believe it. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, Savannah, what do you know? What do you know? You were called here by divine appointment. All of this lined up perfectly in the way that it needed to. You're on this plane. There's no turning back. So you either accept it as it is or you suffer. So I went into prayer, and I started to pray, and I started to remember. And when I got to Ukraine and I met all of my family members, it's like my second home. They were so warm and welcoming. And the peace conference was unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. I was able to step up in leadership in a way I never had before because I was kind of forced into it. The minister wasn't there, so it was like, okay, Savannah, this is your turn. So there was that gift. The second thing is that there was one evening where we did this beautiful nurturing exercise. We call it AB Love at our youth camps. And it's a process where people stand in the center of a circle with their eyes closed, and you have other people come in and show them this unconditional love through touch, through massage, through affirmative words. And we did this process, and it was dark out, the sun was setting, we had candles all on the ground, and we were staying in off into the woods at a retreat center. And it just so happens that many of the displaced refugees from eastern Ukraine had been sent to this retreat center. The government had sent them there because they were homeless and had no place to go. Little did I know. So all of a sudden, as I'm facilitating this process, all of these refugees start to flock into our space. It was as though they felt this energy of love that was so radiating out that they showed up, and they didn't even need any instruction from me. And it was the little ones, because they haven't forgotten who they are. It was the little ones that came into the circle, closed their eyes, arms out, ready to receive love. Not even part of this community, but yet so interwoven in the community simply by our vibration. Your presence matters. It absolutely matters. And so I walked away from this experience feeling so enriched by what looked like a dark experience, what looked like fear and terror and revolution, turned out to be such an incredible experience. So darkness is a gift. And the people and the situations in our lives are gifts. Why? Because they trigger everything in us that we don't want to see about ourselves, right? They're the opportunities, the relationships, the friendships, the coworkers, the people that cut you off on the street, you know, on the freeway, the friend that forgot to return your call, the teenager who won't do what you want them to do. They're all a gift to you in some capacity if you're willing to see yourself. So many of you might have gotten the Science Mind magazine last month, raise of hands, who had a chance to yay. So I had the incredible opportunity to be on the cover last month of the magazine because I wrote an article for the magazine, so I get to actually quote myself, which is really cool. Finally. So the darkness is the creative soil. And the quote says, "We must trust the creativity of the darkness, the holy unknown places, for they bear rich fruit when we've released our attachment to the way things must be." So back in 2012, I was in Egypt. Like Don said, I tend to just be attracted to revolution. I don't know what that is about, except that I'm bringing my light everywhere I go. And so I was in Egypt right after the revolution for about 8 months, and it was really scary. It was a really scary time. I had a struggle leaving my apartment every day because I was followed and often talked to and harassed on the streets. And it was an opportunity for me to really practice what we teach. It takes, and it can take, experiences like that to pull everything unlike the joy and the peace that we experience for you to really see humanity at its core. You get to really see humanity. And so I recall an experience with my beloved at the time where I had so much stripped away of the ego identification of who I am in the U.S. I was forced to see parts of myself I didn't like. There was rage, repressed rage that I didn't even know was there. And he thought I was nuts. He was like, "Who is this girl that I've been dating? I don't know who she is." And I look back at it now and I think, wow, it took me going to Egypt to see this aspect of myself because I was so distracted by the world of effect. I was so distracted by everything else out there that it forced me to go in here. Now, I'm not saying you all have to travel to a foreign country in order to get that. But it's just to be aware that the darkness and the challenges serve us. This philosophy aids us as well. This philosophy helps us in going into that dark stuff and being able to bring it forth into the light. So from the magazine again, embracing the shadow is about surrendering to love. For all of us, we're always getting the opportunity to surrender moment by moment to the presence, to love itself, to something greater than we can rationalize or think up. You know, we all have blind spots. That was my blind spot. It took that experience to pull it out of me. What is your blind spot? It's about doing the work from within. It's very easy to look out there and look at someone else and blame them and say it was all them that created this. It takes courage to look at that stuff. It takes a strength. It takes a tenacity. And it takes a faith. It takes a faith, and I say embracing the shadow is about building our muscles. When you have this inner turmoil, what is it that brings you back to center? I believe that perception is everything. So I'm on that plane going to Ukraine, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. It's all gonna be really bad. And it actually turned out quite differently. My perception shifted. So what is the mind chatter in your mind? What is going on in your thoughts and your thinking? Are you perpetuating a story of lack and limitation, of guilt and worry and fear? Or are you perpetuating a story of abundance, unlimited good, harmony in your relationships? You see, it's a difference of perception and of consciousness. So Ernest Holmes said that thought, which is built upon a realization of the divine presence has the power to neutralize negative thought, to erase it, just as light has the power to overcome darkness. Not by combating darkness, but by being exactly what it is, light. In the Bible it says, and the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. So we get to practice compassion for ourselves when this stuff comes up. What is your spiritual practice? How involved are you in caring for yourself? Self-care is so key when we're doing this work. So who knows the story of the Velveteen Rabbit? Anybody in here? Yes, this was a childhood story of mine. And I came upon it recently and thought, oh my gosh, there's a great sermon talk in here, or a sermon story in here. So there was this Velveteen Rabbit, and this rabbit wanted to become real. And so he was given to this little boy for Christmas, and the little boy was playing with all these mechanical toys. He wasn't really playing with the rabbit. And this rabbit was a little worn out. And there was a skin horse who tells the Velveteen Rabbit about how toys can become real through the love of their owner. So he says, the skin horse says, real isn't how you are made. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or have sharp edges or who have been carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you're real, you can't be ugly except to people who don't understand. So the Velveteen Rabbit thinks, well, I could never be loved this way. And he, through time, becomes shabbier and shabbier, falling apart. And one day, the boy's Nana gave him the rabbit to sleep with, and this boy loved him. It became his favorite toy, and he started to think, oh my gosh, I think I might be real. But then the Velveteen Rabbit starts seeing these other rabbits out playing out in the field, and he says, well, maybe I'm not. The boy became sick, and he had scarlet fever, and so the rabbit was with him every step of the way. And they said that this boy was gonna have to be taken to the seaside. And so they were gonna burn all of his toys. And the rabbit's like, oh no, what am I going to do? So they just so happened to leave him in a bag outside in the garden overnight. And the rabbit is crying, he's upset, he's like, what's gonna happen to me? And all of a sudden, the tears fall into the earth. And all of a sudden, this fairy comes out of his tears. She's born of his tears. And she saw him crying and she said, little rabbit, don't you know who I am? And she says, I'm the nursery magic fairy. I take care of all the playthings that the children have loved. And when they're old and worn out and the children don't need them anymore, then I come and take them away with me and I turn them into real. And he says, but wasn't I real before? And she says, well, you were real to the boy because he loved you. Now you shall be real to everyone. So she took him out into the wood and she turned him into a real rabbit. And years later, he came back to see the boy, and the boy noticed that his coloring was just like a rabbit that he once remembered. And so this story, to me, speaks to authenticity. It speaks to completely loving ourselves, even in the midst of the dark stuff, even in the midst of a challenge. You see, he loved this rabbit no matter what. His fur and everything was falling apart. So I say to you, can you love yourself in the midst of the hard stuff? Can you have compassion with yourself? Can you be real not only with others, but with yourself? It takes courage again. It takes a strength, an inner strength, and it takes a faith that you are part of something greater, that you are part of this wholeness, of this divine presence that so wanted to birth you onto this planet that it did so in such a magnificent way, and you're here to express those gifts. That's what we're here for, to be love. So can you be real with yourself? Can you be real with others? So I want to close with this quote from the magazine. When we are able to meet people right where they are, standing in truth, love, harmony, freedom, tolerance, and acceptance. We will move the world with our conviction of love and radiance. And when we have truly seen the underbelly of a culture, its darkness and its light, the places where it must grow, shift, and change, just as these places must within ourselves, I truly believe we have become global citizens. And so I ask that our practitioners stand in high consciousness.